I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Can we start again?
I've got to do better.
Let's just keep going. All right, come on.
Okay,
can we start again? All right. I just don't think I can work with it. I think it's your fault. I think I can't pick up what you're putting down, Alistair. I mean, your beats are too experimental for me. I'm a sort of a mainstream musician.
Hi, you're listening to Two in the Think Tank,
the show where we try and come up with five sketch ideas. I'm Andy.
And I am Alistair. So, what are you going to do about it? Mafa. And we're gonna keep talking until, I guess, five sketch ideas come out.
Come up with five sketch ideas, yeah. Until they come out of us.
Until they emerge, sort of like a whale coming out of a tunnel.
Do you think that at the moment the ideas are in us
and
then we just got to get them out of here? No, they can't be because they come out of both of us, right?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess we're combining our DNA in a way, aren't we?
Yeah. The ideas are conceived.
We conceive them somewhere in the space between our brains.
Maybe they're mostly happening in one of our heads.
Or do you think one of us has to gestate
the
idea and carry it to term?
Yeah, or somebody has to get it to an idea. It has to become an idea. Oh, I don't know. I think there's loads of ideas. I think we're throwing out a lot of ideas, and then we're picking the one that survives. So it's more of an evolutionary process.
More an evolutionary process.
So there's lots of birthing happening.
Yes, constant spawning, like all these little wriggly little things.
So yeah, we're moving along, just dropping eggs everywhere.
Whoa.
Yeah. And but they're fertilized eggs.
Yep.
And but only one of them will live.
Hatch, live.
Yeah, and then it'll eat all the others.
Yeah. How would you feel if people laid eggs? What do you think that would be like?
I think better.
I think it'd be better,
yeah. I think I'm bummed out women have to go through it. I mean, like, birth seems fine.
What makes you think that it'd be easier for women if we laid eggs? Or are you saying, like, a chicken-sized egg?
Well, I mean, if it was chicken-sized eggs, that would be way better.
That would be way better, but, then somebody's going to have to sit on that egg.
I think I would prefer it if they came out chicken-sized eggs.
Yep.
Right? You can put it in a little incubator type thing, little infrared lamp on there.
Oh,
right?
See, that'd be
great. But then the kids come out about that size.
And you put them under a different lamp.
No. And I reckon if they were just like a bit more capable, like if they could just crawl all over you,
you could really have some nightmares about that.
Yeah, climb up your back like that and just kind of rest on your shoulder.
Maybe you could keep them in your mouth like those toads do.
Yeah, maybe you could do that. Or just in your ear or around your ear or in a little cat house in a hat that you would have.
Or just like some sculpted hair. Like if you could.
Oh,
because that'd like. If there's anything in the human body that would, in theory, be good for a baby to nestle into.
Yeah.
It's the hair, and yet it's on the top of the head in the most exposed and useless space for a regular-sized baby.
Yeah.
Like, you see somebody walking around with a baby on their head, you're not thinking, oh, that's lovely, they're letting the baby nestle into their hair. You're thinking, that idiot's put the baby in a really precarious position where it could be picked off by an eagle.
Yeah,
but
I always worry about
that.
So
the baby's smaller,
right,
and you sculpt the hair or you let the hair grow big and bushy.
Mm.
I mean, if it was like if you had a really good afro going, it would be like a clownfish in an anemone.
Absolutely.
Right? And the baby could just sort of dart in and out of the afro, getting scraps.
Perfect setup for peekaboo as well.
Oh, wow.
Which babies love.
Yeah.
I mean, it could also work with just a top hat with a window, you know? Because, not everybody has hair, and so I don't think
Oh, man. And then if the baby could make wisecracks. It'd just be perfect for, like, you know, just sits in there and then, like, at the perfect moment in the conversation, that little window, it slides open. I'm picturing it's a sash window that slides up like that. And the baby just leans out, shoulder on the sill, and says, "Yeah, I wish you'd told me that last week, Barry, before I bought all this cotton." And that's twins. One of them's got a trumpet.
One of them's, yeah. I think it would be more fun. I'm starting to think that maybe we should be raising our kids with a funny voice. Oh, hey, you gotta go get your toys, see? You know, that
kind
of thing.
That's the thing. Because you can raise a kid with any accent you want. Yeah. All it takes is commitment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just that most parents don't care enough, I guess, about their kids to give them a fun accent or teach them how to talk jive.
I think, you know, all that a parent can really hope for their child is that they have a better lot in life than they did. And, you know, what's better than having a sort of a sassy Boston accent?
Yeah.
Very little.
Get out of here.
I had enough of your kids. Get out that bloody ass. Yeah, get yourself out of the drugstore.
You could make your kid sound like Kennedy.
Yeah.
Like, it took me roughly 20 seconds of doing a Marge impression before my son started doing it. Imagine if I was doing a Marge impression the whole time. Anyway, Otis, come here. And Otis.
So Otis would start doing that?
I was walking around, and for about 15 seconds without thinking, I was going, "Homer, Homer," like that. And then he went, "Homer." Like that, and I went, "Whoa."
I think the Kennedy accent is a good idea, because how many people have you seen with Kennedy's accent? One, right? And he was the president of the United States.
Yeah.
So that accent, as far as I'm aware, has a 100% strike rate of having its bearers become
absolutely
the president.
And it's not like we don't have celebrities here in Australia that don't have weird accents. That's almost a land of people that get success, possibly due to their weird accent.
Husey, Josh Thomas,
Luke McGregor, to a certain extent.
Yes.
Others. You know, I don't really pay attention to people outside of comedy. Whatever they're doing. A lot of TV presenters. I think that's mostly just...
I think a lot of TV presenters, though, wind up with quite a generic voice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You got to be boring.
It's interesting that, like, the newsreader voice that they've chosen to teach all of them is just quite a sort of a mainstream. You know, because once again, I mean, that newsreader voice could have been anything. That could have been Irish Leprechaun.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been Angry Aunt.
Yeah.
Screeching Aunt.
Yeah, absolutely. It could have been a Mugabe impersonation.
It could have been Mugabe.
Yeah.
But we went with sort of mainstream, sort of mid-Australian / British affected
sort of
tones.
Almost like international waters. Maybe like 200 Ks off the coast of Queensland. You know, somebody who owns a boat but is from Australia, but has spent enough time away watching kind of Netflix from America and things like that to sort of allow it to soften and, you know.
People talk about the mid-Atlantic accent as being a thing that's sort of half UK, half US thing that, like, a lot of newsreaders have in the United States.
Yeah, right.
This mid-Atlantic accent. But I think if you went to the middle of the Atlantic and if you looked at the accent that either exists there already, or if you left people out there long enough, the way they would talk.
Yeah.
I think you'd find that, like, the newsreaders don't really have that sort of affectation of, like, the screaming about the sunburn and, like, swearing at the gods for putting them in this position that are, like, the hallmarks of the mid-Atlantic accent.
Sure. I mean, unless all the people that you put out there were newsreaders.
Yes.
You know, and then I guess, in a way, that would sort of be a way of reinforcing why you've called it the mid-Atlantic accent.
Right.
And so, I mean,
we justify
it. Obviously, there wouldn't be this, you know, newsreaders tend to take a lot of the passion out of their voice, I imagine. I don't know if they would be doing that with it, going like, and the sunburn is now killing me slowly.
Mm.
You know, whether they would just sort of just keep the same rhythm as they perished away due to
this just in, I'm eating Eric's bones.
And another thing with a news voice.
That was a good one, Alistair.
Thank you very much. I was going to say something about seagulls eating my toes or something.
Is there anything we can do with that? right? Is there anything we can do with a Mid-Atlantic accent? Like, I, you know, it's not probably not a sketch that's going to appeal to Australian audiences.
There was a few ideas there. There was the idea of raising your kids with a different accent.
Yeah, okay. So I think there's something in that.
You know, and right? Then there's also the Mid-Atlantic thing.
Let's say you're raising your kids with a different accent. I think there are definitely like ways that we could get really quite specific with this that could be quite funny. Like if we say you're raising your kids with the accent of, say, you know, an auntie on her third champagne at a Christmas function.
Yeah.
Right? Or you're raising your kids with the accent of a you know, somebody who's trying to get out of the house. But keeps getting called back in, or keeps the phone keeps ringing.
Sure, yeah, right. Or like, or the accent of a person who's trying to wrap up a conversation.
Yeah, you I think that's great.
Yep.
Sure. So.
Okay. Well. Yep.
Anyway, it was great to chat to you, and so we'll definitely sure.
Yep. Yep, sure. But then you apply that to regular life where you go, I'll have the steak and extra flat. Two Cokes, thanks.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I think that is something
specific.
I mean, in a way, what we're doing here, Alistair, is a form of cultural appropriation. Like, we are taking the accent of people, you know, who there are people out there who are genuinely trying to wrap up a conversation.
That's true,
I'm not
yeah.
sure if what we're doing now is sort of inappropriate. I guess a lot of people who are trying to wrap up a conversation have been, I guess, stuck in that conversation for quite some time and find it very difficult to get out of that conversation. For us to use their struggle
yeah.
for comedic effect is...
Yeah.
Well, it's unfair,
you know. But yeah, it's there's a lot of kind of generalizations get made about that, and so it's like, you know, how can you say that all the people who are wrapping up conversations sort of have ownership over that thing, and also what are you putting on them?
Yeah,
by saying that they all sound like that.
Yeah, how can we do this same sketch and give them the agency that is required? Like, you know. I imagine people who are wrapping up conversations probably find it difficult to get jobs.
Well,
I guess
we could get the actors that we could get to play this could be
people who are trying to wrap up conversations. Yeah. I think that'd be a good start.
But also, I think I'm allowed to write this sketch because I know that my dad has been a guy who's actually currently trying to wrap up a conversation. And also, like, you know, not that I've done it heaps, but I've
anyway,
definitely tried.
Yep. No, that's good, Al. And I think we've done a lot of good stuff with this sketch. And anyway, so thanks very much.
Cool.
And yep.
So well, that's
if
good.
We could just
yeah. All right. No problem.
No, I'll see you.
And, so
are you?
Sorry.
Are you?
Yeah.
No, you. Sorry, you were saying.
I'm gonna just try and wrap up this sketch. And so before we go, no, you're gonna be fine.
I wonder if this, you know, you could maybe this as stand-up somehow. Do you think it's funny enough to do a stand-up? Do you think anything on this podcast is funny enough to do a stand-up?
Yeah, there's currently some things in my show that are in there that are from this podcast.
See, that's, I knew that, and I just wanted to hear you say it out loud. It
yeah.
makes me feel good.
Yeah, no, that's good. And but I don't know if I've, you know, they're not 100% have justice done to them yet.
Doing justice. Well, you got to do justice to this idea.
Obviously. Well, I have a big part of my show that's about justice.
Yeah.
The funniest topic of all.
Well, I think maybe injustice is probably slightly funnier than justice.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I think sort of the needless suffering of
various
well, many
things.
Is obviously hilarious.
But also, you know, the suffering of few can be also quite funny.
Oh, that's true. If it's sufficiently unjust, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting the mathematics of it all of, like, you know, small injustices applied to a large number of people.
Yeah.
You know, to do with traffic infringements or whatever that may be.
Yeah.
whether or not they add up to the significant injustices of a small group of people.
So, like, let's say, like a small, let's say, like Chinese minority, who have horrendous things done to them, right? But let's say there's only like 200 of them,
right?
Whether do they suffer more?
Yes, than the entire population of you know.
Yeah, like let's
Brazil.
Say a billion. Yeah, like the population of Brazil.
If their internet,
if they, or if like the taxes go up 1%,
yeah,
for the poor, but the rich get that money. You know,
who suffers more?
Who suffers more?
Is there some way, Alistair, that we could do a sketch maybe about and I'm not sure if this is something we've done a bit of before, but like with this idea of like bad traffic,
yeah,
right? If there was some way that we could find that we're able to sort of consolidate the frustration, the traffic frustration. And I guess this is a thing that does happen, right? Like if you're making a decision about putting in a new road, say, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to make the traffic situation a lot easier for a large number of people, yeah, right? But there are some people for whom you're going to make it worse,
yeah,
right? Because now there's a new big road near their front house and maybe now they can't get onto the expressway where they used to or something like that. So yeah. Is there some way that we could find where we could make traffic flow perfectly for, you know, 99.999999% of the population by making it utterly impossible for like one or two people? Right? Yeah. Like if we could consolidate all of the traffic problems.
So like the idea that you're building this freeway and it makes it better for everybody except for one guy whose house was sort of blocked in by the freeway and is surrounded by walls now. And the only way that he can't even get his car out and he has to sort of scale the wall to just even leave his property.
So that's very literal.
Mm.
And when you describe it like that, it absolutely gets the point of what I was trying to say.
That's great,
but it doesn't allow me to get the scene of him struggling in traffic, which is sort of what I think is like the comic scene of the thing.
Sure, the comic scene. Yeah, yeah. I guess because it's just a wall climbing
movie.
It's basically climbing
a wall.
It's just basically cliffhanger.
Yeah,
you know, and Stallone's already done
that. And it's been done.
Yeah,
he's taken that that format.
That's gone
as far as it's
going to go. Yeah, absolutely.
The hanging from a cliff. I mean, obviously, Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
did a bit of that,
but they could only touch on it. Try to find some meat where they're.
Yeah, yeah, you'll notice that they dropped that really early on in the film. Yeah, like he starts out, he's hanging from the cliff, and then they saw this was going nowhere. This has been done.
It's kind of like, sorry, just to as a Mission Impossible sort of does sort of like problem sketches where, you know, like a sketch show would do comedy sketches.
Right.
They kind of do little problems that he has to solve in sketches, you know, like that. Maybe that's just what films are, but
people say that like in when you're studying improv, which we've both done a little bit of, doing improv, they say that problem-solving sketches actually aren't funny. Like, people don't want to see a scene in which people try and solve a problem.
Yeah.
Because that's not comedy. What that is Mission Impossible.
That's right. And so that's perfect problem-solving sketches if you're trying to come up with Mission Impossible, you know, improvised Mission Impossible. Now we need to defuse this bomb. Now we need to go through this glass wall so that we can take the fish from the guy so that he leaves the room so that we can get his metallic laser key.
Yeah, so so people, would you think people would go along to see that? You know, because people like comedy, people like action.
Yeah.
Like, could you have an improvised action in which you're not going for anything else? But I think the problem is people would probably still laugh at it.
Well, then it would prove, so I guess, look, people laugh at it, you're proving these people wrong who say that a problem-solving sketch is...
Yes, people don't laugh at it, you've just created a perfect Mission Impossible.
Perfect Mission Impossible. Unfunny.
Now, what we have seen from Mission Impossible is that, you know, they keep making these movies. Ultimately, in each film, Tom Cruise does succeed
yeah.
in the mission. So we do see that the missions are possible.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if maybe what the title is hinting at is that there's some broader mission that is impossible. Like maybe, like what is it within Tom Cruise himself that drives him to keep doing this kind of stuff?
These kinds
and
of
maybe
missions.
The mission really is not whatever he's trying to solve. Maybe it's not getting the laser key from the fish man.
No.
Maybe it's some sort of deeper hurt, you know, to do with, you know, his upbringing that he's not even confronting. Like all of this stuff, it seems like it's a distraction, the way he keeps putting himself in these extreme scenarios.
Where loads of people die at his hand?
Yeah.
That feels like that's a problem within. You don't go into that kind of work feeling okay.
He looks like he's running away from an explosion, but I reckon he's really running away from his past.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. This all makes sense. And you know, when you become one of these agents, you know, one of the benefits is that they erase a lot of that past.
Absolutely,
for you,
yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And just the it being done literally, obviously, is probably works as a form of therapy for you to
but
do it.
I think you're just avoiding it, right?
No, of course. I mean, you can never really erase your past.
Yeah,
you can
yeah.
just erase the electronic traces
records. Yeah,
you know, which some, you know, to a certain extent can you know can save you some embarrassment.
If that's what it is, if like, you know, some 1-300 phone calls that you made when you were 17 are your trauma in your past, then this could be a solution.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's not even a crazy thing for somebody who has, you know, maybe made a sex tape early on in their lives or you know, just whatever, you know, that I mean, that could be it. That could be, it could be a sex tape. It could be maybe, you know, Tom Cruise early on sort of. You know, like
some of his early works.
I mean, it could be one of those things where, you know, in primary school, year three, your school camp, you're walking through the bush. He lets out a fart or something like that.
Oh no!
And it's brutal for even if it's just 25 seconds. But he gets a nickname. You know, he gets a nickname and it sticks with him.
Tom Poos.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now he's 25. He's finished university.
He's
There's
trying to make it in Hollywood.
Trying to make it in Hollywood. People who know him and they know and they meet the people that he you know, his new acquaintances and things like that. Everybody lets him know, oh, this is Tom Poos. Like that. And they tell him the story. So then one day.
And he's trying to tell people, saying, look, when you introduce me, can you not call me Tom Poos?
Yeah, please. I'm trying to make it here.
Yeah.
Like that. And then one day he sees an ad in a thing that's like pretty vague, but it's like work in intelligence, blah, 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 this, you know, get a new life.
Maybe, just what I'm sure these ads look like.
Maybe
get a new life.
Have, you know, maybe have your past erased.
Yep.
And then he goes, this could be my chance.
And so, and then he signs up, he goes, he does all the tests, he signs the thing, and they go through and they run a magnet over all his hard drives. They go into the bank and clinical looking suits with gloves on, and they delete a whole lot of records and they burn some stuff in a bin.
Yeah.
And then they go to his own old hometown and they beat to death with a bat a whole bunch of people he went to school with.
That or they just change his face a little bit. I don't know which one's easier. Maybe just easier to change his face a bit. You know?
Well, maybe both.
If you had a different face.
Oh, yes.
That is basically the perfect way of changing your identity.
I mean, yeah, you've still got your fingerprints. You're burning them off?
I know, but nobody in your life knows you by your fingerprints. Like, all you just need to do is change your face.
I think people used to know each other's fingerprints, you know, but now that we've got mobile phones, nobody knows anybody's
All the fingerprints are just
anymore.
On the bloody phone now. They're never touching and sort
doll.
Of... So, look, I think the Mission Impossible thing with... Where it's, you know, he's running away from something.
Yeah.
Is a greater mission.
Yeah.
That is impossible.
I think, like, you know, whether or not he could, maybe that's, he's been given the mission, right? In a new film, he goes into the headquarters and he say, okay, well, so what's the mission? And they say, well, look, there is no mission. It's time, Tom. Or whatever your character's called.
Yeah.
Probably and Tom.
Tom. Cruise.
like, you've got to ask yourself, like, you know, you keep going on these missions. It's called Mission Impossible.
Mm.
You keep solving them. What does that make you think? Well, I'm very good at solving the missions, obviously. Like, I can do them.
Mm.
Yeah, but we make assessments of this. We know that you're very good at this, but we keep calling the missions impossible. Like, you know, the movies are Mission Impossible.
The movies.
Based on these. They refer to in the... Yeah. So what do you... You know, what do you take away? Like, think about that. Think hard about that. Like, what do you think that means for you? Say, well, I can do the missions. I'm good at the missions. I do them. They're possible. They're not possible. They just need...
But why are you doing this?
Why
are you putting your life on the line for these missions?
That's the Mission Impossible. Like, to...
There is no mission this time. That's the mission.
Oh, wow. The mission is to do no mission and just to be yourself and just to live with who you are and just to... turn inside and just think.
Mm. And then, right? Like, he starts to knit and he...
They send him home.
Like, what's
he gets down a box of albums.
He reads Jane Eyre.
I feel like you brought up Jane Eyre last podcast. You got Jane... Are you reading Jane Eyre at the moment? What is this Jane Eyre thing?
I don't know. I think it's just strange that guys don't recommend... Pride and Prejudice or Jane Eyre to each other.
That is the thing. That is the thing that guys don't do. Mm.
No, but no, there's no guys recommending any Virginia Woolf to me. I've heard she's very good.
But not from guys.
Not from guys. It was a woman who told me that.
I don't know anything about Virginia Woolf.
Yeah.
I don't know. All I know about Virginia Woolf is that she had a different nose to Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
I think that's my one Virginia Woolf fact.
I think she was a bit meta.
Virginia?
Yeah. Or maybe was she, I don't know. I don't know what the word postmodern really means, but she might have been in that.
Was she part of the Bloomberg group? Bloomsbury group.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I don't know. She died in a river. I mean, you lose your membership to a group as soon as you die in a river.
You die in a river.
Jeff Buckley's not a part of any groups anymore. Sorry.
No, that's all right. I mean, you took this conversation, you threw it into the river, Alistair.
Yeah, that's true. It's not a part of any groups now.
All right, Virginia Woolf, right? Yeah.
But wait, we were done with Mission Impossible.
I think we're done with Mission Impossible. Okay. I think we got... everything there was to be got out of that. All right, Virginia Woolf, James Joyce, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we got some great authors, right? We've got some great authors who experiment with the form. James Joyce, Ulysses, obviously.
Yeah.
I tried to read Ulysses. You tried to read Ulysses?
Somebody told me it was too hard. So wow. I didn't even bother.
Right.
That's how hard it is.
Yeah. So hard I didn't even bother.
It's so hard. I'm like, well... You know, and it's one of those things, I don't know, somebody says something, I've sort of seen writing like that, where it's like, the words barely make sense, barely go together, these are not sentences, and this is like, it's written in some impressionist type way, where you're supposed to just kind of, just let your eyes glaze over, and just kind of run over it, and try to
get a general, gobbledygook into you,
try to get a random feel from it, and then...
Right, and nothing really sort of happens, it's just a series of sort of characters and interactions, and... Mm. But, you know, the characters are all fluid and maybe the time isn't even linear.
Mm.
You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and then, but then people say that's amazing. And so you go, well, I don't feel like you truly believe that.
Is this amazing or is it really bad?
Yeah, it's, I think it's the same thing. I don't know if there is good and bad now.
Right.
Like, I think the things that are really bad are probably great because I enjoy them more.
Right.
Know? You know, like, remember I bought some teen novel that I got from some $2 store and I picked it up and I was like secondhand and I was reading it and I was like, this is so bad. And I was having a better time than I've had reading almost any novel. You know? And most of the time that I enjoy a book, it's because I'm going like, oh, this.
Do you finish those books though?
The ones that I love?
No, sorry, I'm saying the ones that are so bad.
Well, I don't even finish the ones that I love.
Right, okay, yeah, so the ones that you think are really good and you love them. You don't finish those.
I was thinking about after Comedy Festival trying to finish my favorite book. I decided it was my favorite book maybe like 30 pages in.
Yeah.
I'm almost 4 years into
4 years deep for this project.
Yeah.
That's Mission Impossible. Finish that. That's a Mission Impossible. Finish that bloody book on your bloody bedside, Tom Cruise.
It's been moved away from the bedside.
Wow.
Yeah.
Relegated.
Okay. So, sketches. What were we just talking about? Oh, yeah, James Joyce, that kind of writing thing.
Yeah. Like, you know, and okay. So what is it that people have to say that it's great? Like, is it a thing of like, once you've read the whole thing, you've got to tell yourself that it was good in order to justify having read this whole thing? Like, there's a, once you get a certain distance into it, you're like, this had better be the best novel of all time. I mean, this is, you just got to tell yourself anything in order to finish it, you know, finish reading it.
Yeah. Maybe it's just also, it's like, well, look, you've never read anything like this before. Yeah. You know, there you go. That was a bit of suffering. That's what life is about. You get enjoyment from the pain of this. Like, it's awful. It's oh, there you go. That didn't feel like anything you normally do. That's good, right?
And is it a coincidence that the people who've written the longest essays about this book also happen to be the people who think it's the best, right? Clearly, the more time you spend absorbing it and suffering it, the better you think you convince yourself that it is in order to justify that amount of work.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
I mean, I reckon you would find 100% correlation with people who've spent a lot of their lives thinking about and talking about that book who also think it's good. Now, if people who thought it was bad had spent, or people who thought it was good hadn't spent any time thinking about it or talking about it, I would trust their opinion more.
Yeah.
Because they've got less invested in it. They've got less to lose.
Sure. Well,
I mean, people who haven't, like Alistair, for example, you were told, you haven't even read the book. You haven't even tried to read the book. Now, if you thought it was a very good book, I might believe you.
Yeah.
Because you've got no skin in the game.
Yeah. Like, I guess it's like stubbing your toe, right?
Sure.
Somebody who does it a lot.
Yes.
Right? Like a lot might start
like professionally.
Yeah, might be like, oh my god, stubbing your toe is the best experience that you can have. It's actually more. It's very complex, and there's a lot of deep tones to it, and things like that. Blah, blah.
Oh, the throbbing. Right?
But people like you and me who just do it occasionally and have just kind of heard of. We do it accidentally. It's not like we
or
just
like
encounter
at a party when there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, yeah. We do it. We go. We think, oh my god, that's awful. It hurts. It's painful, it's the worst, things like that, right? So but people who do it a lot probably love it. So I'm just going to go ahead and just trust the people who haven't been the word would be compromised, corrupted by certain biases in your head that come from overexposure to suffering,
right? Or in this case, like the bias of having read Ulysses.
Yeah.
Right? Like there is an inherent.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Different bias in having read Ulysses in that you become one of those people who has read Ulysses.
Mm.
And people who have read Ulysses are more like, you know, that's as far as a sample of people go. If you're going to just ask people who've read Ulysses if they think Ulysses is good, like scientifically speaking, that is not a representative sample.
Absolutely not, no.
Right? So you've got to ask everybody, right? Or at least you've got to ask some sort of statistically significant group that is randomly selected.
You might even have to just get kids and expose some to none.
Right.
Expose some to the whole book.
Right.
And then let others encounter little bits of Ulysses just along the way.
Now, that might be unethical, right? But it might be possible to study this using chimps, right?
It might be better using chimps or rabbits and putting drops of Ulysses in their eyes.
Okay. So look, there may be something in that Ulysses thing, right? I want to move on to a new topic.
Okay.
Why are we still testing shampoo on rabbits? Because, like, how much better could shampoo possibly get? Like, I am really happy with the current range of shampoo options, and I'm not convinced that if we continue to experiment with shampoo by dropping it into rabbits' eyes, that we're going to be able to come up with a shampoo that is so much better than any of the current shampoos that it's worth torturing bunnies
That's
for.
That's true. And look, but also, how much better can you make, could you be improving rabbits' fur? It's already the most soft and beautiful fur of all. Surely when you're washing it, you're not even seeing that much improvement. And maybe that's why we continue to test, because they're not testing it on humans.
Right. They're testing it on rabbits.
And they go, well, it felt amazing before. It still feels pretty amazing. Maybe a little bit more amazing, but, I mean, the improvement wasn't that high.
Right. So maybe what they're doing is they're testing it on rabbits. They're like, wow. They put it on the rabbit. Maybe they're not even testing it, checking the rabbit fur beforehand. They put it on the rabbit. They go like, wow, this rabbit's fur is incredible. Mm. They put it on a human and they're like, oh, this is kind of like long and stringy.
Mm.
This isn't the effect that we were expecting based on this test we did on a rabbit.
Yeah.
Better go back and do more tests on a rabbit.
On a rabbit, yeah. But also just how much can you improve? Like, I mean, your hair is pretty clean most of the time.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I like, and I would say that, like, you know, we've ticked off the big, like, percentage points in terms of what shampoo can achieve. And, like, I reckon, like, the first two or three generations of shampoo technology, we got 95% of the way that it's possible to go with shampoo. What did we do? Just using soap probably gets you 90% of the way there.
Get rid of the oil. That's pretty much most of it.
Get rid of the dirt.
Yeah, dirt. Get that out. And then, give it a bit of shine. You know? So I guess this could come in the form of a...
Oh, man, I hope the rabbits aren't being tortured for the shine. I hope that like, whatever experimentation we're doing is not in order to get increased shine.
Or bounce.
On your hair. Bounce. Well, I mean, if you're going to test it on anything, I guess a rabbit.
Yeah. Or a trampoline. But could this be, like, it's sort of like a protest video, but that takes a different angle than, you know, because most of the time, if it's a protest on testing on animals, they just show you awful pictures of animals being tested on, right? But that's not, like, obviously I'm already against testing on animals just based on horrible things happening to them, but I don't know any arguments about why they already are testing on animals. And I think maybe what you need to counter is those arguments of why they are testing on animals,
right?
Which is by countering that we don't need to even make shampoo any better. It is fine.
Well, could we do this by seeing the people in the lab working on the animals, and like the chief scientist comes down and says, okay, so what are we working on today? Like, you know, and they come to the realization themselves that maybe this is no longer worthwhile.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the really classic criticism of science that people don't think is worthwhile is the thing of, like, you know, oh, so we're not curing cancer, we're not curing AIDS or whatever, we're doing this. Can we do a sketch based on that? Like, and I'm jumping away again.
That's
from this
okay.
thing.
That's okay.
But, like, it's such a common trope to, like, accuse people of, like, you know, if somebody has done what we perceive to be like a bogus scientific experiment on belly button lint or whatever it is, and then people were like,
it's not curing cancer.
Not curing cancer.
Yeah. What if everybody worked on curing cancer, you know? Or everybody's job was to just work on curing cancer, ending poverty, and reporting atrocities in the Middle East on the Western mainstream media.
Yep. And one other thing. And the other thing has to be really absurd. Right? And minimal.
Okay.
Right? And that is getting something to do with a better type of tea bag. You know,
great. Like, a tea like bag a little, that doesn't like, that the string doesn't come out.
String doesn't come out.
Yeah. And so, because I guess the more you kind of would refine it, the closer you would get to a point where people would still complain about things. They go, well, why are we still curing poverty when we could just be, like, why are we still trying to get rid of poverty while we could be all curing cancer?
Right. Yeah. Getting more and more people in there curing cancer. Like in and everybody just works in one big cancer institute where everyone shouts at each other, why haven't you cured cancer yet?
You're all not curing cancer. Stop worrying about the abnormal cells and just stop with the actual multiplication of the cancer cells. Within the cancer curing community.
Within the cancer curing community, like everything. Like somebody's like, oh, I'm looking at these telomeres, which could be an indicator of you know, the longevity of particular cells, which we think if we buy effective. Why are you curing cancer? Why aren't you curing cancer?
Why are you looking at telomeres when you should be curing cancer? that argument still goes even deeper into the cancer curing community.
Yeah,
like why aren't you just standing in the way? While cancerous cells are trying to multiply, why aren't you just physically trying to stop them?
Individually just hitting them with a tiny hammer.
Yeah.
There's a funny core to that idea, but that it's hard for me to get my head around. Can we just back up a little bit?
Yes.
And just go to, all right, I think there's something about the rabbits. I think we should write something down about the rabbits.
Okay.
Right? Whether it's your idea and it's that, you know, it's an ad saying like, what do we need? Why do we still need to do this?
Yeah.
Or if it's the scientists themselves talking about that. I mean, the idea that scientists are on a day-to-day basis looking at something and being like, or making the decision of like, oh, should I cure cancer today or should I do this? Should I?
Yeah, yeah. That is fun. Yeah. Oh, should I keep, should I see if I can make a seed that grows quicker, you know, sort of quicker dandelions, or should I cure cancer?
No. Oh, there's two doors that he can choose to go through, or like two folders on the desktop.
Mm.
He could open up.
It's fine.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry. Should we? Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not curing cancer.
You know, look, Andy, we're coming up with sketch ideas here. Obviously, it would be better if we were curing cancer. but I think where the decision is made every day is kind of an interesting idea like that.
Or is it sort of almost talking to, you know, your significant? So you're talking to your husband in the morning when you're about to go off to work, and you say, so what are you going to do at work today, honey? And she's like, oh, look, I'm not sure. You know, I've got a few different things. I might work on I've got a balloon thing where I can make that stretchy end bit easier to wrap around your fingers, so you can tie the knot in the balloon. And then there's a cancer thing as well. So I'll just see.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm telling you what I'm definitely not going to do: cure cancer today. I don't care about it.
I'm not going to do it.
Hmm. I mean, you know, in the end, don't you think that by contributing to a society that can fund the curing of cancer, we are in a way, no matter what we do, helping to cure cancer.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I would argue that the less time that people have to spend tying the ends of balloons, the more time they'll be able to spend either A, like if there's cancer scientists actually working to cure cancer, or B, if just in general society, that'll contribute to the economy, increase productivity, that'll mean higher tax revenues and more research money that can be put into such things as curing cancer.
Yeah, and so you could take the idea of like, you know, today in the news, there was a psychological study that found that people who spend more than 6 hours a week playing the piano become much better at the piano than people who don't spend time practicing, right? And somebody goes, "Ah, well, that bloody doesn't cause cancer. What are you doing, bloody studying that kind of obvious shit when you could just be curing cancer? You know, that's a bloody waste of time." And then the whole thing is an argument about why this study has actually does contribute to the curing of cancer.
Right. There's a thing of like to get real. Can I get real with you, Alistair?
Please.
Where with scientific reports, they always have to try and it's for funding. It's so important that you get media coverage for things these days. Like, you've got to sell your stories in such a way that it's got some sexy angle, right? Like, you could have done research on some obscure polymer that could have something to do with Alzheimer's in rats, right? Mm. But the headline for the article has got to be cure for Alzheimer's on the way thanks to Australian university.
Yeah.
Right? So what if it was like somebody has done research on, you know, playing the piano and that sort of thing? It was like, so, but then they're being maybe the marketing department of the university or whatever, or a journalist or something like that is coming in and saying, "Well, look, I can't, no one's going to want to read an article about this. So, you know, what are there any broader implications of this, of what you've found out here?" Well, I guess we could probably extrapolate this to saxophone players and harpsichord players and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I suppose,
all of the big string instruments. Mm,
does it get any broader than that, though?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose if you sort of were to look at it more broadly,
and I'm taking off my strictly scientific hat here, but I'm saying that I guess
this kind of learning could be applied to any field, and in that way, just the knowledge that this is possible does free up time in people's lives, to spend their time more wisely.
Right.
So in a broader sense, he goes, "Well, I suppose it's directly responsible for
curing
cancer."
So you're saying there's a cure for cancer on the way thanks to an Australian university? Well, that's not what it says in the report, strictly speaking. But the implication is there. If someone had looked closely enough at these results, they could see. I suppose.
Look, don't. I never said that. Trust. Don't directly quote me. But this will definitely help saxophone players.
So the piano, the saxophone, the harpsichord, and I guess you could picture sports like skateboarding and that sort of thing, or similar hand-eye coordination, crucial stuff like that. And then obviously, the implications for cancer research are significant. Yes,
I think that's a great. I wrote it down even before we were finished.
Oh my god, I'm so glad we fucking got something out of that.
And look, and I think that's an important sketch.
An important sketch, and I think it'll have some significant implications.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was involved in the curing of cancer. We still need one more, and I know today we're a little bit. We're going late in terms of
going late.
You know, we're 46 minutes in, and we don't have a fifth one. I think we've probably been in this late before.
Yeah. Before fifth sketches come. Absolutely, Alistair. And for us to panic at this point, start.
I wouldn't panic.
Pointing fingers at each other and saying like, "You, Alistair, haven't brought enough to the podcast."
No,
that sort of thing. Like, what really about
eyebrow fashion.
Eyebrow fashion. Okay, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, what have you got? You've got those vertical lines that you can just cut in there. You can sculpt like that.
Yeah,
And then there's plucking, and there's obviously there's waxing, and then there's cosmetic tattooing.
There's the whole replacing of the eyebrow with a tattoo. I suppose
Do you think that there's anybody who's ever got a cosmetic tattoo of a monobrow and then had to have laser surgery to remove the central section so that they can have two brows?
Two brows, yeah.
One could argue that if two brows are better than one, then why aren't we then sculpting our individual brows into two further brows that we actually have four brows?
Yeah.
That's just mathematics. I'm just seeing patterns there. you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, two twos is four.
Exactly. You know?
And if two is better than one, then two twos is better than two ones.
Assuming that it does follow a strictly like linear geometric progression, it's not the Fibonacci sequence. Yeah. So like after two, you would obviously want three, and then you would want five.
Oh, well, that would be interesting, because if you did want three, then you would have sort of the ends of, like, that's the sort true. Of the outer ends of one, and then the monobrows.
You keep that mono.
Yeah. You sort of keep the mono so that you can have three, you know, arcs.
If you, yeah, that's a real missed opportunity that, like, do you think that the monobrow is a hangover from when we used to be cyclopses?
I would definitely say that, yes. I mean, I guess it's there's no two ways about it.
Because that's how people evolve, right? Like they started out with like one eye and one nostril and one arm and one leg, and then over time we evolved to have two of most
two
of those
of everything. Yeah, I think it's when we were ripped apart from our
spiritual soulmates.
Yeah, soulmates.
Yeah,
that's why there's now man and woman.
Mm-hmm.
So and then, but then we somehow got back together. Got
double
with them.
The yeah, yeah. Right.
So wait.
I'm sorry, just Alistair, there was something about you saying the words "got back together," which made me feel like there's a sketch about getting back together with something. You know how like. I'm sorry, this is so tenuous. Like, I'm feeling out here, just in the dark, right? But, you know, what do you get back together with in life? It's pretty much only ex-partners that you get back together with. Ex-partners either in the relationship sense or in the cop sense, right? Getting back together to solve one last case.
Yeah.
I mean, what else do you get back together with? The band, you might get the band back together.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I guess an old.
I mean, but you know, can you reunite somebody with a with an old appliance or
getting the team back together? It's a guy. It's one of those bowl scrapers and a sort of
a what
a bowl scraping, you know, like one of those rubbery ends that is really great for just extracting all of the filling that's left in
a
bowl.
Yeah, that's not good.
Stuck to the wall, that and his, you know, obviously is his favorite bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be, you know, it could be a woman and her long lost hobby.
Yes,
of stamp collecting.
They feel too. Plausible to me.
Sure.
Right? Like I'm
well, I mean the two halves of a person somehow getting back together, like somehow a person being split in half. I guess you could film it by shooting like I guess half your body wearing a green screen on it.
What about Alistair getting back together with your old body hair? Right? So the clump of hair that was on your head and that is now in the plug hole. Right. Could you get back together with that? And I'm, you know, either by, you know, you like it's been a long time. Right. And then you see it there and you realize you remember the good times that you had together.
Yeah.
And you pull it out of the plug hole and whether you put it back on your head.
What about just as a just to add on to that.
Great.
You get back together with every piece of DNA you've shed. Like every part that at one point was you.
Yep.
Somehow like kind of a Magneto type thing.
Mm-hmm. Your fingernails. And
yeah, you just kind of like. And
feces?
Yeah. The feces was not necessarily your DNA.
I mean, some of it would be,
but you know.
Discarded cells.
But some of it is just food, you know, but it's food. It's the food that didn't become you, really.
Right, in a way, it's the least of you.
It's the least of you. I felt like singing All of Me. Mm-hmm. All of me. Wanna take all of me. I guess that's what happens. It's when two people get married, but then they decide that they want to give each other. They want to give their all. They want to give their all. And so then they go and stand on top of a sort of a. It's like a. It's quite a, you know, a sacred hill.
Yeah. And it's not a mountain.
They put their arms in the air, sort of, I guess, like a. Like, who's the guy with the who never doesn't get killed, but you gotta unless you cut off his head there?
Highlander?
He's like a Highlander. Instead of lightning, they go, ah, like that. And then all the parts that used to be them little dry bits of skin and hair and pubes and like sweat and things like that all just kind of, I mean, no, sweat's not DNA, but like that. And they become this kind of huge, puffy blob of...
And that's all of me.
That's all of me.
My love, you are so precious. I want to give you all of me. I want to give you everything that I am. And also everything that I have ever been.
Yeah.
And so here I am.
And that makes...
Big old blob. I think about that as an aside, Alistair. I think about that with money sometimes. I think, imagine if I never spent any money ever. I'd have so much money. And then I think about what it would be like to get all the money that I'd ever spent back again.
Oh, well, you know, anyway. if you were to do this thing, you know,
of course, maybe, I'd be dead. But
well, that's fine. But then you'd probably also be dead if you got covered in all the skin particles that you had lost over you.
That's true.
So, look, I know it's quite disgusting, the idea
it's
of
quite
like,
disgusting.
But being faced with your beloved, but then you see them covered in all the dead skin that they've lost over time and all the pubes and hairs and stuff like that that cover their body. But I mean, when you accept somebody into your life, you know, and you make a vow to be with them forever in health and in fitness and in sort of all the dead cells that they once had on their body. I think that that's, you know, that's a bigger gesture in a way than
absolutely being able to accept somebody for what they really are, which is a person covered in all their dead biological matter.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's a beautiful thing. What if, like, just to make it slightly more achievable, realistic, and maybe like a little bit more real world, it was somebody who says, says that I want, you know, to give you all of myself.
Yeah.
And then they are just somebody who has throughout their life collected all of their old hair and fingernails and, you know, skin scrapings and that sort of thing.
Sounds much more achievable.
In boxes and jars and that sort of thing in a basement. Is it possible to just derive a sketch more from the sort of that character piece of that person and the reactions of their loved one? You say, well, you love me, don't you? Well, of course I love you, Eric. Well, then, you know, this is all me. You know, these are toenails. They're me, aren't they?
Yeah, and
how are they any less me than...
Oh, absolutely. And then she was like, go on. Well, he goes, go on what? He goes, you know, run your hands through it all. You know, feel free to play with it.
So you want to, you know, you want to surround yourself with me. I've got a big tub on my hair.
I've saved myself for you.
Oh, Alistair.
Hey, and now it's yours to do whatever you want with it.
Burn it. Burn it in a pit.
No one's, all these things, they're all pure. No one's ever done anything to them.
All my teeth, all my baby teeth, all a little jar teeth. There, all my baby teeth. Well, you can put those in your mouth and just swirl them around, and it'll be like you're kissing me at every stage of my life. Let's make out with my baby teeth in your mouth, baby.
Baby.
Oh, can you imagine kissing someone with a mouthful of loose teeth?
Yes, I can, Andy, and it makes me happier than I've been all day.
Well, I think if you can't imagine that, I reckon just get somebody to have a mouthful of peanuts. Don't get them to chew them, and then make out, and I reckon it'll be very similar.
Yeah,
just a handful.
I think peanuts would be still like an adult's teeth, but if like if you want to do baby's tooth, maybe lentils or sort of short grain rice.
That's way too small.
Too small. Well, what about like a real small baby? Or it's like, you know, what if you were kissing a spider monkey's baby?
Yeah, spider monkey baby.
Yeah.
If you want to know what it's like to kiss somebody with a mouthful of spider monkey baby teeth, just some rice, just some short grain rice.
Yeah.
Or maybe long grain.
Yes, longer.
I mean, have the teeth been taken out with a root and all, or are they, have they come out, fallen off naturally with a
root and all?
Root and all. Well, then that you're looking at a long grain.
Yeah, you're looking at a long grain.
I think that's terrifying.
Yeah, that's terrifying, and I like it.
I mean, that's almost as disgusting as the thing with the guy with a spider in his mouth. Maybe it's more disgusting.
Really?
Well, it's got a more like sort of. It feels realer to me. It feels like there could really be a psychopath out there who has done this.
And the fact that you're only finding out that this person has done that right after you've married them and they're ready to share all of themselves with you, that is a great, like, sort of like you've just walked into a room and the person you're with has just locked the door.
I don't think they've locked the door, but they've definitely closed it and they're standing between you and the door.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to ask them to move in order to leave.
No, I think it's one of those, like, because it's a marriage. It's a marriage, so you have to ask a lawyer to open the door for you.
Oh, no.
Got to get a lawyer involved. Anyway, look, I think that's our five sketches for today.
Yeah, yeah. That's a
sketches. This is what we got. Specific accents to raise your kids with. People to, one example of an accent is the people who are trying to wrap up conversations.
I think that's such a good example, Alistair. I was really proud of you when you came up with that.
Thank you very much. It's probably one of the only good contributions I made today. Greater Mission Impossible, which is the greater mission behind all the missions that are so-called impossible. But this is the true one that's impossible, which is the one that's stopping him from quitting being a Mission Impossible guy.
Yeah.
You know, what's driving him?
There is no mission this week.
There's no mission this week, and that's your mission.
Mm.
I will now self-destruct. And then...
aren't you going to self-destruct? No.
No.
No, I'm just going to sit here, and if you need to talk to me, I'll be here.
Oh, I find that so satisfying when the message destructs.
Well, that's because you want to run away from the past.
Yeah.
You know, or things aren't that simple, you know. Sometimes people tell you things that you're not ready to hear, and you've just got to be there with them in that moment.
Yeah, and well, so...
Not everything and, self-destructs.
And
okay, I do self-destruct in this case.
Yeah, I do, yeah. But in the
I think my point still stands.
40 to or so years. Anyway, testing rabbits, testing on rabbits, and why are we still testing on rabbits? But like from the point of view of... shampoo has come far enough and the improvements that we're making is probably not as
great. I mean, of the things that we're testing on rabbits, like I want something to be above a certain threshold.
It's not
in
curing
order for us
cancer
to, it's not curing bloody cancer, is it?
Yeah.
What about if they're also testing other elements like the marketing for the shampoo on rabbits?
That's
see
good
who responds better to like different designs of bottles.
Here's
my complaint, right?
Yeah.
As a guy with really bad eyesight who showers without his glasses on, so often, if I'm in a strange shower, I can't tell which one's the shampoo or the conditioner.
Yeah, right.
I mean, so many strange shampoo and conditioner bottles.
Oh, I know, but the worst thing is when you can't tell which one is the bottle, like the bottle that's got all the...
body wash?
No, the...
semen.
No, the... the sort of like the crazy glue, you know, in the bottle. You know, and end up in a real comedy situation with your hands stuck to your hair. And then there's the study. Oh, yeah. Study headline ends up with being about Australian university curing cancer. But it's like, it's the person pushing for that for the angle so that they can get their funding or whatever.
Mm. I think like, the journalist as well. Who
yeah,
wants
it's the journalist who just wants to have
a story out there.
Exactly.
I need something I can sell.
And I've been wanting to find something about that exact topic for so long.
Really?
Just how shitty science reporting is in the mainstream media because everything is simplified to a point where it's like, well, this is this amazing thing happening. And then you read it and you go, well, it's not so amazing if you really look into it. It's actually
and then
pretty complicated.
People lose faith in science because like five years down the track, well, we don't have a cure for Alzheimer's. Well, we were told that there was one 5 years away.
Yeah.
And they've been telling us that forever.
Yeah.
Man, when is somebody going to bloody come up with a cure for that, eh? For bloody misinformation in science reporting?
Well, I'm not sure, but if it leads to a cure of cancer, then we'll probably report on it. And I want to give you All of Me is our final sketch where
oh, dear.
A new partner has collected all the shed DNA, skin, hair, mouth cells.
All of me.
Take all of me.
You're so good. You've been listening to Two in the Think Tank. Thank you very much for listening to the show. On Twitter, you can find us. I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
And
Alistair.
I'm at AlistairTB.
And together we are at Two in Tank. We're a part of the Planet Broadcasting Podcast Network.
Podcast Network.
Home to so many wonderful podcasts.
Do
so
go
we
on.
Encourage you to go and listen Steel to all Wars. Of them. Do go on. Recorded in this very podcast studio here.
The Weekly
and,
Planet.
Fantastic people. Weekly Planet. I mean, the granddaddy.
Yeah, if you look, go out there, listen to Weekly Planet. They got some great stuff going on. Listen to that, comic book movies.
Yeah, it's good of us to throw them a bone.
No,
and,
look,
recommend them.
You know, it's like when you go out with your rich friend,
right?
You go out to dinner with,
I know,
your,
I
with
know.
Your rich friend.
I know you who go, you're talking
sometimes
about.
Sometimes it's nice if you just pay for them. You know,
well,
the people who are rich friends are sick of having to feel like they have to pick up the bill all the time, and I feel like probably people with much bigger podcasts than us are sick of feeling like they have to
promote
our podcast. And you know what? Only of all the podcasts, only listen to the Weekly Planet. You know,
stop listening to this one. We don't need you.
Yeah,
all right, we're fine. You go over there. I think the people, the rich friends who. You know, that's the real meal for them, is getting their meal paid for.
Mm, that's right. And that's where their riches actually come from.
Right.
Yeah.
So they weren't rich, really.
They're really rich, but it all comes from being, like, the richer you are, the more money you end up making, because the more you seem like you're super rich and people shouldn't.
People insist on buying the dinner to prove that they don't need your charity.
Mm, exactly.
Right? Yeah, of course. Haven't paid for a meal in 15 years.
Yeah. Anyway, we just can't stop coming up with sketch ideas.
Oh, I'll tell you what, creative powerhouse.
Yeah.
Take it to the river. You go again another day. We love you.
We love you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.